through, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to Iran Radio from the vibrant capital of Tehran. And we are here to share more programs that inspire and connect. Let's dive into the next batch of our programs this hour. Our next program is For Humanity, Bridging Faith and the Human Experience. This program covers a variety of subjects concerning human beings in the Noble Quran, including individual and social issues. Subjects like the family and how to interact with other faithful Muslims are explored from the profound perspective of the Holy Quran. Then we have Ulama's speech sharing the profound wisdom of top scholars. This program broadcasts excerpts from the Farsi and Arabic voices of well-known and reputable Islamic and Shia scholars and authorities, complete with English translation. It's a unique opportunity to learn from the masters. Next, enjoy another segment of our diverse radio programs. Following that, A to Z of Life is here to inspire your Islamic lifestyle, hosted by Sister Zainab James. This program presents an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle in a variety of engaging ways. utilizing ayahs from the Holy Quran and Hadith, as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. After this, we'll hear For Humanity.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For Humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaam alaikum. This is Hussein, and you're listening to your program For Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about different Islamic teachings and Quranic elements pertaining to humanity and human beings. And in previous episodes, we started studying and covering a very good book in this regard titled A 250-Year-Old Person, which is a compilation of the sermons and lectures delivered by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In these sermons and lectures, he covers the life story and seerah, or biographies, of the Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the great leaders of Islam from his pure progeny. We were talking about the life of the Prophet of Islam in Medina. We talked about the external threats to early Muslim community in Medina. We talked about the pagans of Quraysh who attacked Muslims in Badr. And then we talked about how that resulted in another subsequent attack by pagans against Muslims in Uhud. There is this mountain called Uhud in the north of Medina. And pagans encountered, the army of pagans encountered army of Muslims there after an initial defeat of pagans against Muslims. Unfortunately, because of the disobedience of some of the Muslims, and because Quran says, وَفَشَلْتُمْ, you lost your courage, and you left your positions, and that's why the enemy took advantage and attacked Muslims from the behind. And in that situation, chaotic situation, many good Muslims were martyred, including Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet of Islam, and some of those members of the army of Muslims, they were running away, escaping the battlefield. Quran says, it's that tasaduna wala taluna ala ahadin. You were climbing the mountain and you would not even turn to see behind what's going on in the battlefield. And the Prophet was alone, except for some Muslims who remained and defended the Prophet. So it was a bad story and bad memory for Muslims, especially the martyrdom of Hamza affected the Prophet gravely, and also other Muslims who were martyred. And there was a lesson for Muslims to be taken from this, that if you disobey the leadership, if you do not abide by the laws or by the instructions given by the leader, unfortunately, defeats such as what we see in Uhud are very possible. Then, after Uhud, because of that situation, you could say that the pagans still had hope that we can have our final blow to this community, to this religion, but we need proper preparation. So you have the Battle of Confederates, or Ahzab, or Khandaq, the Battle of Trench. And the reason that is called the Battle of Trench is that in the fifth year after the migration, pagans, being very happy from the results of Uhud, they said, okay, now we should just go and finish these people. But for this, we need to take other tribes beside ourselves. Now, in this book, in his lecture, Ayatollah Khamenei says that people of Quraysh might not have been very experts in military techniques and tactics. That's why, because they were mainly good in business, and that's why they took aid from other tribes, and they create alliance against Muslims. That's why it's called confederates, ahzab. So they created a very big army, and they wanted to attack Muslims by surprise. But Muslims were informed beforehand, and they took in defensive position. Inshallah, we're going to cover that in the second segment after the break.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin al-Mustafa. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin al-Mustafa.
Welcome back. This is Hussein, and you're listening to your program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the Battle of the Trench. We said it is called the Battle of the Trench because of the defense measure that Muslims took upon the instruction or suggestion by Salman the Persian, Salman Farsi. When the Prophet and the Muslim community in Medina were informed about the preparation of a great army by Confederates who were coming towards Medina, and they had only 1 week to think how they want to encounter them. The numbers were very higher than Muslims. And they had in mind, the Confederates, the pagans of Mecca, they had in mind that we go to Medina, we kill 100, 200 people, including the leadership and the people who are close to Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and then Islam will be finished. So Muslims were informed of this, and the Prophet summoned a council of Muslims that what should we do? And Salman suggested that in situations like this, in our part, in Persia, we have a defense measure. We call it khandaq, which is coming from the root, old Persian root khandaq, which means something that you dig. So we dig a trench, like large trench and long trenches, that would stop the army from coming to our city. So Muslims started, and again, you have the leadership style of the Prophet, come and come, not go and go. The Prophet himself started digging the trench, and all other Muslims also participated in that. Ahead of everyone was the Prophet himself, who would spend times here and there helping Muslims and digging the trench. So after 1 week, they had a long trench dug around Medina. Actually, there are some natural barriers like the rocks and hilltops around Medina that would function as natural barriers, and Muslims did not have to dig trench there. They only had one space in the north of Medina that they had to dig a trench. And then when the Confederate army arrived there, and it was winter, actually, so they were stopped. They could not do anything. And they spent, I think, 2 weeks there, including a week of digging the trench. It lasted for Muslims for 3 weeks. After 2 weeks being there, the Confederate army could not do anything, and they went back. That is the short version of the story. And there the Prophet said that this was the last time that they tried to attack us. And from now on, this will be our time to take active steps, not in the form of offensive attacks, but active steps. Inshallah, we're going to cover them in the next episode, how the Prophet, step by step, started to get close and establish their ground further and further by having the Umrah al-Qadha and then the Fatah, the triumphant return to Mecca without any bloodshed and in a peaceful way. Thank you very much for listening. Inshallah, next episode, we're going to cover those later years of the life of the Prophet in Medina and leading to the Fath, triumphant return to Mecca. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
It's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
یه وقت آدم در حرم رو میبوسه فکر میکنم به عشق امام رضا در حرم میبوسه به عشق حضرت علی و امام حسین.
Sometimes a person is kissing the shrine thinking they are kissing it out of love of Imam Reza, out of love for Imam Ali alayhi salam and Imam al-Hussein. But they come into the courtyard and do not kiss the wooden door. It is clear that their pilgrimage is because of the gold, that is the golden dome. We must seek refuge in someone who knows what we are made of, because sometimes a person does not even know himself.
من ممکنه 10 تا سخنرانی بر عدالت بکنم که همه مردم بگن به به.
I might give 10 speeches about justice and everyone says, bravo, what a great speech. But if you are given a sheep or a goat and told to distribute its meat, I take the kebabs for myself. That is, I give 10 speeches about justice, but in distributing the goats, I am not just, because I take this kebab for myself. God knows what we are. A person does not know himself. Therefore, the Quran says, your side today will be piercing. On the day of resurrection, when secrets are revealed, eyes will be opened. Your side will be iron. Your side today will be piercing, means your side on the day of resurrection will be iron. It will shock you. What? Was it me? I thought I was a good person. No, you are not good. Thank you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Can we not see how the planets look like diamonds in the sky? And everything on earth was created for you and I. Can we not see? Smiling at your fellow man, or looking up at the velvet sky, and sometimes it makes me wonder why we're all still here. Do we feel a deeper meaning? All again, do we think it's all again? Do we think it's all again? Do we think it's all again?
journey into the unknown, from West Asia to Turkey, to the Greek islands, hoping to reach Europe illegally. It is considered one of the stories of illegal immigration faced by many refugees and migrants. This journey often starts from West Asia to the Turkish coast of Izmir, which is a departure point for many people trying to reach Europe, especially across the Aegean Sea, in an attempt to reach the Greek islands. A young Palestinian from Gaza. His story is part of the tragedy lived by the people of Gaza. It reflects the level of despair felt by these young men, despite their attachment to their land and their right to it. However, some see that seeking refuge in Europe is a temporary solution to financially support their families in Gaza and help them endure. Amir risks his life on an illegal journey, hoping to return one day to his occupied homeland under better conditions than today.
I traveled to help my family because of the recent war on Gaza. We lost our lands and our home, and my father and my fiancé were martyred. I traveled to support them, but after everything I witnessed here and the illness we suffered, we gained nothing. We'll return to Gaza after what I have seen here. I will take the residency and go back to Gaza because it is my homeland and I will never abandon it. I will not leave it to the Israelis.
Gaza Strip has been under siege for years, and now it is experiencing genocide, forcing people to leave their land, but they refuse to do so and cling to their land despite the deteriorating economic situation, increasing unemployment rates, and lack of educational and professional opportunities. The residents also suffer from a severe shortage of basic resources such as electricity and water, in addition to the continuous destruction of infrastructure due to armed conflicts and ongoing wars. The people of Gaza face enormous challenges in building their future within the Strip and need support to continue resisting.
I traveled from Gaza alone on a visa to Turkey, then from there to Egypt, and later back to Turkey. I got in touch with a smuggler there, and we set off across the sea 8 times. We saw death with our own eyes until we reached Greece, hoping to live with dignity, but we regretted arriving there. No one understands the suffering of traveling by boat except those who have gone through it. No matter how much I describe it, no one will feel what we went through. Many died at sea because of the Greek Coast Guard, who would shoot at us, take our phones and money, and send us back to the sea mercilessly.
Psychological distress that we see is really high. You have people crying, people shaking, people decompensating as well sometimes. And again, it's always linked to the fear of violence, the fear of being pushed back, the fear of being exposed again to not knowing what will happen, and most often to violence. So there is really those two components in this activity, the medical care, but as well the psychological care.
Israeli colonization of Palestine is the problem of West Asia. But the United States and the European Union have provided significant political, military, and financial support to Israel for decades. This support has contributed to solidifying Israel's military superiority and the continuation of its occupation of Palestinian territories.
United States in particular is considered Israel's biggest ally, providing billions of dollars annually in military aid and repeatedly using the veto power in the UN Security Council to prevent resolutions condemning Israeli policies. The European Union presents a more balanced stance on the surface, but practically it also supports Israel through trade agreements and strong diplomatic relations, with timid positions on the ongoing violations of Palestinian rights. Many believe that this support encourages Israel to continue its policies of occupation, settlement, and blockade, without fear of international accountability.
Very interestingly, and actually it shows how what's happening in Greece in terms of migration is linked to the broader picture and what happened outside. People from Gaza were actually one of, or the first community of people arriving in Greece before the 7th of October. People arrive in Europe, in Greece, indeed with a lot of traumatic experience, a lot of violence happened to them from country of origin to the transit country, to sometimes as well when just crossing the sea from Turkey to Greece. We provide psychological care. We have a few psychologists, and they either provide group session, but also individual session, trying to release a relief the suffering of those invisible wounds.
Many humanitarian organizations provide support to migrants on these islands, but the problem persists as it needs radical solutions at the level of European countries and international cooperation. The most important of these solutions is addressing the root causes of migration and developing comprehensive migration policies. The European Union has not provided significant support to Greece to help it face the refugee and migrant crisis that has flooded its lands in recent years.
Our team provides emergency medical assistance to people as they arrive on the shore of the island. We do this in close collaboration with authorities. There is a public information that notifies at the same time all authorities and all relevant actors that a group of people has landed and is in need of medical care. So then based on our capacity, we deploy an emergency medical team to go and provide medical and psychological first aid.
The illegal immigration journey taken by Amir and others is not just an escape from a miserable reality, but also a search for solutions to earn money and support their families back home. Even if it is fraught with risks, it is, for them, a temporary solution until their situations improve in their countries. However, they say the only solution to the refugee problem is the end of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands and the establishment of peace in West Asia, which requires global international will and UN resolutions.
It is true that asylum is accepted for Palestinians, but the authorities do not cooperate with us at all. We do not enjoy any human rights inside the detention centers, where we suffer from harsh living conditions and widespread diseases with no real medical care. When I went to the hospital 5 times, I only received painkillers without a clear diagnosis of my condition. Life inside the camp is very difficult and inhuman.
The Mediterranean region is considered one of the main routes used by illegal migrants to reach Europe. Boats depart from Turkey and North African countries, such as Libya, Tunisia, and Morocco, heading toward the coasts of Italy, Spain, and Greece. This maritime route is fraught with danger, as thousands of migrants lose their lives at sea each year due to poor travel conditions and overcrowded boats. Political instability in some North African countries, like Libya, exacerbates the issue, as these nations serve as major departure points for migrants. On the other hand, Turkey is used as a gateway for illegal migrants crossing into Greece via the Aegean Sea. Despite agreements between the European Union and Turkey aimed of migrants, thousands still manage to sneak into Europe through the Turkish-Greek border. These migrants do not stop in Greece, but continue along land routes through Bulgaria and the Balkans, eventually reaching Austria and Germany, where they seek asylum or economic opportunities. Amir met with traffickers and was promised an arrangement for his journey across the sea. These traffickers offer their services for large sums of money, and migrants are often in desperate situations, forcing them to accept the risks that could cost them their lives. The traffickers promise to get them to Europe, but in reality, they cannot guarantee the safety of the journey. After leaving Gaza, Amir set off on a maritime journey aboard a small boat, crammed with dozens of other migrants. The journey across the sea was fraught with dangers, rough waves, high heat, and harsh conditions on board the boat, all of which were unbearable challenges. Amir and his fellow travelers were on the brink of drowning as the boat had technical problems, and there was a shortage of food and water in addition to encounters with the Coast Guard.
I have many friends in Turkey, and we exchange information about the smugglers. There are areas like Izmir and Bodrum that are full of smugglers. The problem is that choosing the wrong smuggler could mean losing money or being deceived. There are different types of trips, with prices ranging from 1,500 to 4,000 euros. The fast boat is the best, as it takes only 10 minutes to reach the island, unlike the regular boats, which take hours and are more dangerous.
So the living condition in the camp is contributing to the prevalence and the spread of preventable disease, including skin disease, respiratory infection, but also gastrointestinal illness that will mainly impact the most vulnerable, including the children. We are also seeing pregnant women who are in need of emergency medical care. The living condition also contributes to anxiety, stress, and depression. That's why MSF is providing services, primary health care, sexual and reproductive health, mental health support, but also legal and social services to assist asylum seekers and refugees in Samos.
Of course, when you talk about a population that is contained in camps where living conditions are precarious, you can only imagine how it exacerbates actually the risk for ill health. So you talked about the winter, for example, on Samos this year, the blankets, although it's a regular need, every year we need blankets when it gets cold, and it took a couple of months actually for people to receive blankets. So then usually what we see is a spike in respiratory infections. It's really concerning as well, because in those camps you have a number of more vulnerable population. There's a very high number of children, pregnant women or elderly, and of course they're more at risk of cold weather or in general climate conditions. And then in summertime you have the risk of dehydration, which is also having an impact on the health.
Migrants rely on traffickers who organize their journeys illegally on rickety boats crowded with passengers. These trips are often dangerous because the small boats may not withstand the harsh marine conditions or the large number of passengers. There have been many incidents in which victims have drowned or been injured due to the difficult weather conditions. During the journey, migrants face a major threat from the Greek Coast Guard, who try to intercept the illegally migrating boats. Reports speak of attempts to prevent them from reaching Greek shores, often through imposing legal penalties on the traffickers or returning migrants to Turkey. The problem of illegal migration to Europe through Greece has garnered widespread attention from global news agencies due to its danger and impact on both European countries and the migrants themselves. Greece is one of the main gateways for illegal migrants from the Middle East and North Africa who are trying to reach Europe by sea or through the land border with Turkey. These news agencies also discuss European policies regarding migration, the conflicts between countries like Greece and Turkey over migrant crossings, and the associated humanitarian challenges.
The realities on the ground. On one hand, you have narrative explaining that, of course, migration policies need to be implemented in compliance with human rights or legal frameworks. But the realities on the ground is that you see that you see the dysfunctioning of the system, whether it's the provision of assistance and services to the people inside the camp, whether it's the functionality of the asylum services, there is delay in the appointment, there is delay in the interviews, you have a lack of interpretation, lawyers are not being paid, which means that some interviews cannot take place. You have, again, blankets being delayed. So it's really a disconnection between the overall narrative and also the amount of fundings that is providing and then what is actually happening on the ground.
Illegal migration from the Middle East to Europe is one of the main results of armed conflicts, prolonged occupations, and political and economic instability. Some of the key causes of these phenomena include the ongoing Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands and the resulting humanitarian and social crises, with the only solution being the end of the Israeli occupation of Palestine and the achievement of a just and comprehensive peace in West Asia.
There is no work in Gaza. We work all day just to be able to buy the simplest necessities, and even housing has become very expensive. For this reason, we risk leaving Gaza, hoping to provide a decent life for our families.
Detention centers on the Greek island of Samos are among the places that witness difficult humanitarian conditions for refugees and migrants trying to reach Europe. Samos Island is one of several Greek islands located in the Mediterranean Sea and is a key crossing point for migrants and refugees arriving from Turkey in dangerous sea journeys.
Regarding the restrictions in the camp, they are very limiting for us, especially in terms of entering and exiting. The time restriction for leaving and entering is from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and after 9 p.m., entry into the camp is not allowed. The second restriction is the tax on passports. Some people are unable to pay this tax, and there are individuals who have completed all their procedures. But the only obstacle left is paying this tax. Moreover, there are severe consequences for not paying the passport fee. If this tax is not paid, the entire process is halted, and no assistance is provided in any way. The procedure must then be restarted from the beginning, which is a major obstacle for those who have received approval for asylum.
Humanitarian organizations provide medical care in refugee camps and areas experiencing conflicts, such as treatment for infectious diseases, first aid, surgical treatment for injuries resulting from conflicts, and treatment for war-related injuries. Psychological care and support. Due to the harsh conditions faced by refugees, organizations provide psychological support and counseling to help them overcome the psychological trauma caused by wars or displacement. The organization works to provide vaccinations to prevent diseases that may spread in refugee areas, such as measles and cholera, through organized vaccination campaigns.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, The Busy Father. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio. With me, Sister Zainab, and obviously talking about the father's role in the raising of the children is hugely important. Now, traditionally, we would put special emphasis on the role of the mother, and we, of course, we still do, especially in Islam, because obviously the mother is the one who, one of her biggest roles is to actually raise the young and to raise this wonderful new generation. But obviously, we do see many fathers very actively involved in the raising of their children. And that is even though, obviously, even nowadays in our very modern, crazy world, many fathers are very busy. And even with both parents sometimes working, sometimes fathers are out of the house even more than the mother still. Now, I just want to refer briefly to one particular thing from the life of one of the famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, by the name of Saeed Jan Bozorgi. Now, he, again, obviously was very busy. We're talking about, obviously, our martyrs would have been, sent to the front. They would have been away at the front a lot of the time. But then, when they were actually at home, or also this also refers to some of the martyrs, because some of the martyrs did not actually get martyred on the battlefront. Some of them got martyred after the Holy Defense, dying of really horrible injuries or diseases from their active duty in the Holy Defense, basically. But so Saeed Jan Bozorgi, he was very engaged in teaching his son. So, for example, he would actually himself teach him some of the shorter surah of the Quran. And it was even said that he would recite poetry to him. And, you know, this is quite special, really. Welcome back to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And so obviously I'm talking about how active some fathers are in the raising of their children. And obviously I've just given the example of one of the famous martyrs from the Holy Defense, Saeed Jan Bozorgi, who would teach some of the shorter surahs to his son. And, you know, this is something we do see in some families, that the fathers will take this very active role. So not just, so I'm not talking about just, you know, for example, if a father comes back from work and just sort of double checks, you know, the sort of question, or the typical question, especially when children are sort of in high school, that sort of age, might be, oh, how have you done? Oh, are you up to date with all your schoolwork? Have you done this? Have you done that? to actually encourage the children to do more. So whether that is to, let's say, so I'll talk about various things. So, for example, to sort of try and get them engaged. And just, for example, also in keeping themselves healthy, so really sort of being engaged in, for example, encouraging them to take up particular sports, which is really good for their overall health and fitness. So actually taking them to whatever it is, whether they're playing football, whether they're doing a martial art, even just taking them, let's say, to the local park in the evenings, or, you know, at the weekends when the father's time, just sort of getting them out there, having that time to chat with their child and sort of just catch up on what's going on, not just in terms of the schoolwork, but also finding out, because this is precious time. This is when the father can also sort of find out, okay, so what's going on in my child's life, sort of what what sort of friends is my sort of child mixing with? Is everything okay? Are there any issues? Because this is something, and this is really one of the very important things, to actually keep the channels of communication going. So not just, for example, so there's the one element, the educational thing, sort of maybe even, teaching our child some of the surahs of the Quran, or encouraging that, but really keeping the channels open so that we are, as parents, are the first to hear, or as fathers are the first to hear, what's going on in my child's life. So they always come to us with whatever is going on in their lives, inshallah. So I pray this is just sort of a refocus for all of us, just a reminder, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on RMB English Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Say that love strikes only once, that precious moment I offer you. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest road? You are my guiding light that walks me through the night. Your presence gives me strength, gives vision to my sight. Someday faith will increase, someday our wars will cease. Someday there'll be justice, someday there will be. Possess, I offer you. I wanna be someone whom you can trust. Come save us from a world that's so unjust. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon? Where is the please, where is the sun?
Good day to all our dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, your trusted companion for reflection, dialogue, and discovery. And now we have some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of the Islamic art and architecture, especially the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surah and 6,236 verses or ayahs. The longest chapter of the Quran is Al-Baqarah with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Holy Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar with only 3 verses. Now we'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Be with us. For the beginning, enjoy another segment of our diverse radio productions. After that, we'll have Foresight with host Sayyid Shahriyar Naqvi, joined by various famous English speakers and lecturers. This program focuses on the practical application of worshipping Allah and servitude to God in relation to addressing contemporary challenges. Get ready for a truly insightful discussion. Next up, Round the World with Reporters take you on a global adventure. This program transports you with fascinating reports from correspondents worldwide, covering culture, politics, and more. Round the World with Reporters connects you to the world's pulse with the stories that inform and inspire. Following that, we will have another segment of radio productions for this broadcast. Stay tuned for the next segment of our radio production.
Months after the end of the war between Israel and Iran, questions still linger. What really happened during those 12 tense days, and how did it change the balance of power in West Asia? Around the world, analysts, generals, and think tanks are still dissecting the conflict, its tactics, its technology, and its implications. But one conclusion is already clear. This was not a regional skirmish. It was a clash between Iran and some of the world's most advanced military powers, Israel and its Western backers. And yet, against all odds, Iran emerged having done something few thought possible. It forced one of the most heavily fortified militaries on Earth to rethink what security really means.
In the 21st century, wars aren't won just on the battlefield. They're fought across screens, data centers, and airwaves, where information can be as lethal as missiles. For decades, Israel was seen as the undisputed military power of West Asia, backed by the United States, equipped with F-35 fighter jets, and shielded by the Iron Dome and other state-of-the-art anti-missile systems. But when Iranian missiles found their way to targets deep inside Israeli-occupied territory, the old assumptions began to crumble.